1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the
ABC
Civic Media
News
app.
I'm Alex Stone. Coming out of their meeting, arm in arm, to a round of applause. Vice President Harris and two Tennessee state lawmakers who were kicked out of the state house yesterday by the Republican majority. The pair had taken part in a gun control demonstration. The applause for members of the Tennessee Black Caucus. President Biden spoke with those expelled Tennessee Democrats, saying the chief exec, an Army sergeant, has been convicted in Austin of murder for shooting an armed protester in Texas during a 2020 racial justice march. Sergeant Daniel Perry facing a life sentence. You can hear at the Masters Golf Tournament in Augusta, Georgia on the ESPN coverage, a large pine tree fall near a crowd of patrons on the 17th tee box.
And the pink today.
Oh, good gracious. Watch out.
Oh, my God.
I hope everybody is okay.
Holy smokes.
Nobody was hurt. Play was suspended because of a storm. This is ABC News. The ports of L.A. and Long Beach came to a halt today over labor issues several months into labor talks between the Dock Workers Union and Maritime Shippers. The Longshoremen's Union reportedly withholding labor, shutting down the ports. The two ports handle about 40% of all U.S. imports from Asia, including a lot of manufactured goods. It's unclear when the ports will reopen. The moose walked into a hospital, not the start of a bad joke. A moose literally walked into the lobby of the Providence, Alaska Health Park with the help of automatic doors. Security Director Randy Hughes tried to keep people away, but it seemed everybody wanted to get a photo.
So everybody was excited to take pictures and stuff like that. But, you know, thankfully, everybody remained calm because the moose didn't seem to be spooked at all. It's not every day you get a moose walking into a building.
The moose was too busy eating office plants to be bothered. It finally just walked out on its own. Hughes believes it's the same moose that's been wandering around the medical campus for a while. I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Great to listen to while having Alani's and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media. And don't forget the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mabner. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Republicans say the party should not change its position on abortion despite losing two of the most significant elections in the past two decades largely on that issue. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporting that instead, party leaders cite ineffective campaigning and messaging and Dan Kelly's massive loss to now Supreme Court Justice-elect Janet Protasiewicz. The race flipped control of the court to liberals for the first time in 15 years. Representative Glenn Grothman says the fact that voters passed referenda increasing requirements for cash bail and backing work requirements in order to receive public assistance is a sign that, quote, the public is overwhelmingly with Republicans, unquote. Nearly $140 million in federal dollars is coming to Wisconsin to upgrade drinking water infrastructure across the state, the money part of the bipartisan infrastructure law signed by President Biden in 2021. I'm Jane Mabner. This is Civic Media News.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org, brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. I want to get to the economy. First foremost, I agree with James Carville. It's the economy, stupid. Always, it's the economy, which is interesting in the latest polling that so many people think the economy is going in the wrong direction. The latest poll coming out saying that it's better than it's been, but it's not great. 7 in 10 still say that the economy is in poor shape, and half the country says that they're in worse financial situation than they were a year ago. And I greedflation, the gouging that we're seeing at the pumps, at the cash registers. Thank you, corporate America. But this is one of these moments where you go, do you wonder why people think that the economy's, doing poorly? Because when you talk to people individually, they're getting by, they're doing okay. They're making cuts, they're doing what they got to do, they're making it. It's not that the economy's terrible. In fact, the numbers are actually moving us in a pretty good direction. I'll get to that in a minute. But our news media, our corporate-controlled news media, who wants us always on edge, don't get too comfortable, I think they got a lot to do with it. I look at the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class. Headline, is the resilient job market about to crack? I look at Jamie Dimon, the guru over at JP Morgan Chase, saying that, that banking crisis, not over, and it's going to cause repercussions for years to come. In fact, he says that a recession risks have increased because of all of this. It's all bad. And we see this. Our news media is great at this. It's terrible. It's horrible. Things are bad. Be afraid. Be angry at whoever's in the White House. And look, the White House is doing, I got to tell you, I think they're doing a great job. The job numbers came out today. Another 236,000 jobs were added in the month of March. We now have unemployment at 3.5%. And here's the, and my Republican friends will say, yes, but job participation. Yeah, participation rates are back to pre-pandemic levels. So now that argument's going away. And what's interesting to me is that, and this is what I love about Joe Biden. From Trump, we heard, how wonderful he was. We heard it was infrastructure every week. There was always a shindig or a gala at the White House, him playing with trucks, him wearing funny looking hats, all kinds of stuff. Didn't do anything. Had great rhetoric, had really good social media. Hey, look at me. Wanted the spotlight. Spoke glowingly about all the things that he thought he did. But we got a guy in the White House who doesn't speak very well, doesn't say very much, and is actually just doing the job. There's more than 12.6 million jobs have been created under his watch. Now, this is one of those little factoids that I found quite entertaining. The fact that in just two years and a couple of months under Biden, he's now created more jobs than every Republican president of my lifetime. Think about that. In just 2 years, he's created more jobs, 12.6 million jobs, than every Republican president of my lifetime. During the 16 years of Bush and Trump, 1.9 million jobs were created during their tenure. The Clinton-Obama era, that 16-year era, 33.8 million jobs were created. And understand, you know, the Clinton years were good for a reason. What was that reason? Oh, yeah, we raised taxes on rich people. What's another little cute factoid before I get into the Biden numbers. Since 1988 and the end of the Cold War, the U.S. has seen 48 million new jobs created. 46 million of those 48 million were created under Democratic presidents. Let that just swirl around. Because again, we're told that, you know, the Republicans are the party of business. And they are. They're the party of business because business profits have gone through the roof. We've done away with, you know, redundancies. We've crushed those pesky unions. Profits through the roof. Working people, you know, again, who need jobs, they get screwed under Republican administrations time and time again. And somehow we seem to have a large number of working class folks going, I'm going to vote for them. It's really just quite remarkable to me. Now, as we said, you know, 12.6 million new jobs in the last 26 months, unemployment rate 3.5%. 236,000 jobs in the month of March. This is good. This is good news. This is moving us in the right direction. This is moving us in a direction of creating opportunities for folks. I remember during the Trump years, we all heard about how low the black unemployment rate was. Well, record levels of black unemployment right now under Joe Biden. So no more Trump talking point. And as I said, labor participation rates are back, highest level since the pandemic. GDP growth, there's been some work done on inflation. Things are coming down. But here's the thing, and this is the part that gets me again. You know, I have people saying, you know, Rick, you know, why you beat up on the Republicans so much? Other than the fact that Republicans hate working people, right now they're holding the country hostage. This idea that we're not going to pay our bills is insane. Absolutely insane. They are holding the country hostage. And I think right now they truly do want to shoot the hostage. They truly, and that hostage is us, but they truly do. And what we know is going to happen. If you don't raise the debt ceiling, if you don't do this, we're going to have, don't take it from me. Take it from Mark Zandi. Mark Zandi is the guy over at Moody's Analytics who has said, look, if Republicans don't allow the debt ceiling to be raised, it's going to plunge us into the much wanted and wished for recession of the Wall Street Journal and the Jamie Dimons of the world. They're going to get their wet dream. It's going to happen. Also, it's going to cost 7 million jobs, more than double the unemployment rate. And what does that mean? That means you, me, and working people are going to suffer. Why? Because of their ideology. GDP is going to drop by 4%. The stock market is going to drop by 20%. It's going to wipe out, you know, trillions in wealth. And seniors are going to get screwed. This is what Republicans are. It's what they want to do. And it's all because they want to stop spending. And this is one of those interesting kind of moments where you go, I have people tell me, well, Rick, don't you know? You know, our debt is huge, 30-some trillion dollars. And you go, yeah, it is. We should pay that back. We should start thinking about that. In fact, you know, I'm old enough to remember a moment in history sometime around 1999, early 2000, where Alan Greenspan, the Fed chair at the time, said, we're going to be debt-free and we don't know what to do when we're debt-free. because we've never done that before. What's the world going to look like? Rest assured, Alan, history brought us George W. Bush, who just blew that right out of the water. In fact, you look at the, I look at my lifetime. Reagan takes the Oval Office. We're about $1 trillion in debt. And then we go on this tax cut fetish. We got to give more to the wealthy. We got to give more to big business. This idea of trickle down. And I'm sure you've heard of this. They sold it to us. It was going to be heaven on earth. Manna from heaven was going to flow down. It was going to be rivers of gold and honey, and it was going to be beautiful. It was going to be amazing. Everyone was going to be a millionaire. Everyone was going to have the corner office. It was going to be great. We're going to get rid of all that New Deal stuff. We're going to crush those unions. It's going to be great. We're all going to be individuals, and we're all going to have the most toys. It's going to be fabulous because greed is good. And what did we do? Well, we created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization. Yay, us. While simultaneously creating a massive debt. Massive amounts of debt. And how did that happen? Well, you look at the Reagan tax cuts, massive tax cuts. You look at George H.W. Bush came into office and said, wow, this is bad. We've got to raise taxes. And he lost. Clinton raised taxes a little bit. And then the Bush years just crushed it. And we're moving in this direction where things are bad. Now, you know, again, I come back to this moment where I'm hoping that we're not going to get to the end of the road and Republicans aren't going to crush our economy, aren't going to hold us hostage and shoot the hostage on the other end. I'm hoping that this isn't where we're going. But the sad reality is we're in a moment where if Republicans get their way, if the wet dream happens, we're going to struggle for it and we're going to suffer for it. This is why, again, I come back to this moment. We have to decide which way we're going to go. Is it to continue the tax cut fetish and all the things that the GOP want to do? Or do we forge a different way? Let's go to the phone. We got Joey on line one. Joey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you, Rick? How you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind, brother?
Great, brother. Yeah, I just got home from organizing out in the field, organizing security officers at a local hospital.
Outstanding. And, good on you, brother.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, and organizing down here in Florida in the deep south. It's the climate. It's not easy. Let me tell you, the anti-worker sentiment down here runs deep and has a long history. You know that from the early days of slavery all the way up to now, just labor rights and labor-friendly organizations have always looked down upon down here in the Deep South. And I'd like to speak to you as I like your idea for the First Church of Collective Bargaining. So I'd like to, if I could anoint you as Pope of the Church of Collective Bargaining. His Holiness, Rick Smith, Pastor Father Rick Smith, His Holiness. I like that.
No, it's something that we're actually trying to work on because I look at collective bargaining almost in the same kind of a faith-based, you know, I believe in it. I believe wholeheartedly that's how we reunite this country. That's how we share prosperity. That's how we come back together as a nation. So I'm all on board.
Damn right, brother. Yeah, it's what we need. We got to come together. We need more solidarity. It starts early in the classrooms, too. We got to encourage our brothers and sisters in the teachers' unions to start educating the youngest guys starting out in elementary school about the history of the labor movement and what collective bargaining means and what unionization has done for this country over the years and its decline, what that has done for the country as well. So we've got to get our brothers and sisters in the teachers' unions and the educators' unions to let the youth know about the important history of collective bargaining and what it means. Thanks, brother. Thank you. If I could just thank you for your show and Aaron being a voice for labor. We're just going to keep on fighting down here, down in Florida. As all the barriers they put up, we're just not going to stop. Me and my fellow labor activists, we're going to stay in the streets of Florida, and we're going to organize everybody from janitors to security officers all the way up to college professors, and it goes on and on. So, again, thank you for everything you do, brother. Have a good night. Solidarity.
Thanks so much, Joey. Good stuff, Joey. And this is how we do it. People getting into the streets, people doing the hard work like Joey's doing. Great, great stuff. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Back on the other side, I got to continue with this because it's really bugging me. I right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I want to spend a couple of seconds on this tax cut fetish thing. Because, you know, this has been, you know, all my life we've heard Republicans. Ask any Republican, what are they in favor of? Tax cuts. They all want tax cuts. Now, again, it doesn't really filter down to you and me, to working people. But we pay for it. Oh, do we pay for it. And again, we've created a sizable wealth class. And good on them. They've lobbied heavily to get the power and the money that they now enjoy. And there was a moment the other day when my wife and I were having a conversation that this kind of, all of this popped into my head. Real quick, we live in a township that just evidently lost the contract to pick up our trash, and a new carrier has come in. And this new trash collection company has basically doubled the rate and stopped a number of practices that the previous company did that had allowed people to, you know, only have trash pick up a couple of times a year or whatever for a much cheaper rate. This company is saying, no, everybody's in. And, you know, the conversation went, you know, kind of like, well, they're an older couple. They don't create much trash. And the neighbor's clearly angry because their rates are going to go from, you know, a couple of bucks a year, you know, up to, you know, I think it's going to go up to from 200 to 400 bucks a year now. So his rates are going to go from probably like 50 bucks a year up to 400. And he's rightfully angry. Welcome to capitalism. And this is one of those moments where you go, this has been coming for a very long time. What we're seeing is welcome to late stage capitalism. The rates just doubled for no reason. You know, gas prices have gone up a little bit, labor costs a little bit, trash, you know, dealings with a little bit, but not double. Not double. What this is a good opportunism, greedflation, good opportunity to put money in their pockets. And, you know, as my wife said to me, our neighbor thinks, you know, there's some shenanigans. Somebody may have gotten a kickback, which may have been. And my mind went to the reality of what's happened. Just let's take this. I remember we lived in a place that privatized, the first year they privatized the trash. It was $100 a year to pick up. Well, by the time that contract ended, guess what happened? That rate doubled. Why? Because the township that we lived in at the time got rid of their garbage trucks, got rid of their workers, got rid of all of the infrastructure to do anything on their own as part of the commons, as part of what we the people do for ourselves. And why did they do it? They did it so they didn't have to raise taxes. So that they didn't have to stand in front of the voters and go, you know, we had to raise your taxes to continue to pick up your trash. What they said is, well, we didn't raise your taxes. This is just a fee. It's a garbage fee. It's not a tax. But trying to explain to people that no, these were taxes before. Your tax dollars paid for trash pickup. Now they've given you a bill from a private company. And of course it doubled. And you look at this and you go, of course it's going to double, because this is what happens when greed takes over. Trash is part of the commons. Picking this up is good for society. It's not good to have free riders and not good to have people who are figuring out how to game the system. It's bad for, this is a bad scenario. And I was saying, look, I remember when I first started working out of high school, I worked for a township, actually a small city, suburb of Cleveland, Brooklyn, Ohio. And in Brooklyn, Ohio, at the time, they had a crew that showed up at 6:30 in the morning, and they went to your house and they pulled your garbage cans from behind your house and put them out in front of your house. The crew that came in at 7:30, they went and they picked it up, took your trash away. Then they had another crew that came by later and put your garbage cans away. This was part of your tax dollars. Now, again, this is the early 80s. This is when this happened. As we've gone to this, we've got to cut taxes, got to cut, can't raise anyone's taxes. What then happened is, well, first they stopped putting the cans back. Then they stopped taking them out. And then they stopped picking it up because they got to privatize it. And now you're paying probably as much as you would have been paying for all of those services before to a for-profit company. Now, this little community, from its tax base, for seniors used to shovel their driveways in the winter. And in Cleveland, that's a big deal. And they used to cut grass in the summer. So if you were a senior citizen, you didn't have to leave your home. And it didn't cost you anything because it was part of your taxes. And people didn't complain. People didn't go, well, I didn't get my grass cut. Why should Granny across the street not pay? Because we were a different society. We were a society that still cared about the commons, still cared about our neighbors. Now I live in a township that we missed two bills because our credit card got taken off of the automatic billing. The township sent me a letter threatening to foreclose on my house for a private company. This is where we've gone. And it's all because it all goes back to this Reagan era. We got to slash taxes, got to cut taxes. We got to give more taxes to the wealthy. And what's happened is we've tried to maintain the commons. We've tried to maintain educating our students. We've tried to maintain a military budget that's beyond, the top 25 countries behind us. We tried to maintain ensuring that kids don't go to bed hungry, or at least pretending like we're trying. And what have we done? We've ran up massive amounts of debt because we've been sold this idea. We've been sold this idea that that's all socialism. And it's crazy to me. Perfect example of something that drives me just beyond nuts. You have a legislature, a Senate in North Dakota, who recently defeated a free school lunch program. Now, again, I grew up in the 70s. Lunch, you had school lunch programs in the summertime for people and all across the country. Reagan destroyed that. Here in North Dakota, they voted against school lunch programs for kids. Sorry, you low-income kids, you don't get it. But you know what they did? They voted an increase in the meal reimbursements for themselves. This is the world that Republicans have brought us to. Hooray for me and the heck with everybody else, especially the poor, especially the working class, especially the people who actually get out there and do the jobs. So I look at this moment. We've got choices as a country to be making in the near future, and a lot of them. Sadly, what we're focused on, and this is just the bizarre thing to me, is we're focusing on who people love or how they dress or who they congregate with. It's insane to me, while we're literally being robbed blind at every turn by a political party hell-bent on grabbing power for themselves and keeping the rest of us desperate. The fact that Republicans are really willing to hold our nation and the globe hostage so that they could slash spending again without raising taxes, without doing any of the damage they've done in the past, is just beyond me. So for me, again, I remember the past. I remember when we cared about our neighbors. I remember when we were part of a society. And it wasn't just hooray for me and the heck with everybody else. Maybe we can get back there. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1803. That was the day utopian socialist and women's rights activist Flora Tristan was born. She's also remembered as the grandmother of painter Paul Gauguin. Mario Vargas Llosa most recently popularized her life in the 2003 novel, The Way to Paradise. Her family was aristocratic, but she grew up in poverty outside of Paris. The young Flora found work in an engraving shop and married the shop artisan, André Chazel. Together, they had three children. When the marriage became violent, she left him, though divorce was impossible. By some accounts, she became a maid for the wealthy and traveled Europe. It was through her travels that she became a socialist. She witnessed abject poverty and inequality in too many countries and was drawn to the work of the utopian socialists. Tristan campaigned for the right of divorce and wrote at length of worker struggles on the cusp of industrialization. Her novels, which confronted women's inequality and workers' rights, appeared in the late 1830s. She regularly visited feminist and socialist salons in Paris, where ideas linking social transformation and women's rights were popular. Her most well-known work of nonfiction is The Workers' Union, which appeared in 1843. In it, Tristan argues that craft guilds could no longer adequately represent workers in an era of industrialization. She envisioned an international union of workers that organized regardless of skill level, a union that took on broader issues of social justice. Tristan also tied the advancement of women to the advancement of workers. She believed that discrimination against women only strengthened anti-worker forces. Workers and women had to take up each other's causes in order to win true justice. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
With new outrages erupting every day, I find some comfort in knowing that we the people have at least eliminated certain particularly ugly plutocratic abuses. Child labor, for example. Well, outlawed, yes. Stopped, no. Recent reports reveal that thousands of children ages 12 to 17 are toiling illegally at dangerous jobs in manufacturing, construction, food processing, etc. To be clear, there's nothing wrong with teenagers working. They might need to help their families, gain experience, or just earn a few bucks. Indeed, I worked part-time throughout my high school and college years, and while I did gripe some, overall, it was positive. So this is not about children working. It's about corporate child abuse, plain and simple. For example, last year, Packer Sanitation Services was caught, quote, employing oppressive child labor in meatpacking plants to clean saws, head splitters, and other butchering machines. In a typical incident, one 13-year-old was badly burned by the caustic cleaning chemicals they used during long night shifts, which ran from 11 p.m. to at least 5 a.m. Once caught, top executives of Packer Sanitation tried to sanitize their reputation by proclaiming that they have, quote, zero tolerance for any violation of child labor laws. Oh? Ask that 13-year-old. Yet, our worker protection laws are so weak that Packer's multiple violations resulted in a fine of $1.5 million. That's not even peanuts for this nationwide giant, which is owned by Blackstone, a Wall Street huckster whose executives pretend they know nothing about the children they endanger for profit. This is Jim Hightower saying, how about we make a few of the children and grandchildren of Blackstone profiteers work some midnight shifts cleaning meat-cutting machinery? I'm guessing they would stop the abuse overnight.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So let's talk about another Republican disgrace. You look at what's going on in Nashville right now, and absolutely disgraceful. I mean, there's no explanation, no justification. And the part that I find, at least I hope that happens, I hope the two Democratic representatives who were expelled, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, I'm hoping that they're both reappointed in an interim basis and that they win re-election, so that all of this black mark on the Republicans' face, all of this that they're going to get over the next several months, was all for naught. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on in Nashville, I've asked Reverend Ingrid McIntyre to come talk with us. She is a reverend at the North Cliff United Methodist Church there in Nashville. Reverend McIntyre, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. I hope I can share a little bit of good news this evening.
So is there good news before we get into all the anger and the frustration that I've been getting from people about how dare Republicans do this?
Yeah, I think we may have a little bit of good news. So this evening, Vice President Kamala Harris was in Nashville and at the Fisk Memorial Chapel and spoke to us. Was fortunate enough to get in to be able to hear her. Before she got up and spoke, our mayor got up and spoke, and he said from the podium that Justin would be back in his seat. So I feel like, and I spoke to several council people, and I feel like he has plenty of votes for them to reappoint him. So that's exciting.
But here's the thing that gets me. I mean, I look at the speech that Representative Justin Jones gave, and talking about all of the people who are in that General Assembly who nobody bothered, you know, admitted pedophiles, people who pee on people's seats, all kinds of craziness. And yet, because these guys had the audacity to not be silenced, they're now being expelled. But, and I find interesting, and this is where I guess this is a case of Tennessee being Tennessee. It's the two black guys who get expelled and the white woman gets off.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you can see a silver lining to any of this, it's that our racism is on full display. There's no hiding from this. It's been a very hard week. For those of you out there who are Christians, this is Holy Week. It is for me, and I have said this is Holy Week. We have seen, people judged in ways that, literally, these guys have been, and Representative Gloria Johnson as well, but both Representative Jones and Representative Pearson have been speaking out on behalf of gun reform in our state, which we know we desperately need, or some of us know we desperately need, and really speaking out on behalf of children who died or killed just 11 days ago, right?
This is the important issue in this, because, you know, I look at this as a way to smokescreen all of the other stuff, because now this has taken front stage, center stage. And what we're not talking about is the 3 9-year-olds that were slaughtered. What we're not talking about is the fact that Republicans came out and said, no, we're not doing anything, because we don't believe anything can be done or should be done. And we should be, while talking about this incredible overreach and abuse of power, we should be talking about their apathy and their unwillingness to do anything to protect our children.
Well, not only do anything, but trying to pass laws that make it more readily available to the general public, right? Like trying to pass looser laws, like allowing 18-year-olds, lowering the gun age from 21 to 18, arming teachers in schools. We're not even heading in the right direction yet. So I feel like we have a long way to go here for sure. And so I guess, a silver lining is that this is getting a little bit of national attention. And hopefully we can start working in the other direction.
Well, here's the thing. If you gave the teachers guns, at least they'd have plenty of shelf space to put on them, because there are not going to be any books there.
Right. That's right.
I mean, and the sad thing is that was meant to be a joke, but it's not funny.
Right. I get it. Yep. It's not funny at all. I mean, this is serious. Again, this is like a life and death issue. And the reason that I am so supportive of Justin Jones in particular, but obviously both of them and Representative Johnson as well, is because thank goodness somebody in Tennessee finally stood up for the people. We've got people in power here who make very strange choices that I don't feel represent, the views of the people. And, but like you said, the main point is the guns, right? It's the guns. And it's, and so I'm thankful for them for standing up. This is not something that we see very often in Tennessee, unfortunately. And so for their courage, I certainly pray for their safety. We have had people who are truth tellers in our area have their homes shut up for being truth tellers. And so for the truth tellers out there, certainly I pray for their safety, and we will continue to act for gun reform.
Yeah, but I look at this, Reverend, and, the sad reality is Tennessee, Democrats are basically voiceless anyway in the General Assembly. Republicans have a supermajority. There's nothing that Democrats can actually do. So, turning off their microphones, locking them out of meetings, it just seems ridiculous that you would go to these lengths. But it does show a pattern. I mean, I look at other states like Florida, where you've got a governor who's thrown out a prosecutor he didn't like. You've got Montana doing some shenanigans. You're seeing a lot of Republican-led states. Even going as far as silencing just debate, even we know it's not going to get us anywhere. They're even just shutting that down.
Right.
That's a frightening kind of thing, don't you think?
Oh, are you kidding me? It's terrifying. I mean, I was in the gallery the other day when they issued the resolutions, they pushed all this out. They also pushed the media out. Are you kidding? That's when I got terrified. I was like, actually terrified. I do, I'm in spaces like this a lot. I feel pretty okay and confident in them. But when they push the media out, I couldn't believe it. But I'm thankful. Again, really, I think this is a really good step forward that people around the country are watching right now. This is helpful. We know that things change in movements, and we need more people in this movement to help us get some gun reform change in Tennessee.
Now, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Reverend Ingrid McIntyre. She's with the Glen Cliff United Methodist Church there in Nashville. Let me ask you this. Do you think this heightened awareness, do you think people paying attention to this, do you think that this is going to change anything? Do you think it's going to bring more people around to maybe some common sense? Or is this just going to be, we've dug into our silos and we can't do anything about it?
I will say that I have hope that this will wake some people up. And I will continue to pray for that hope. But I do think that we have some opportunities in Tennessee, particularly if we do some rural organizing, and just basic sharing of information around elected officials, who they are, what they stand for, et cetera. If we can do that in some of our more rural counties, I think that we have an opportunity to possibly make a change.
Yeah, that is the hope.
It is the hope, because this overreach, the overreach is insane. At the same, sorry, go ahead.
No,
At the same time that they're, you know, that they're expelling our representatives, they are also cutting our Metro Council in half. The state has gone to such overreach that they have come into our city council and they're cutting it in half in Nashville.
So let me ask you a last question I've got for you. What do we do? What are you hoping folks hearing this will do? What are you hoping for?
What I'm hoping that folks will do, I mean, we're at the end of our session. We have 1 week left of session. What I'm hoping folks will do is keep their foot on the gas so that when it comes time for elections, that you can ask the people that you're voting for how they feel about gun reform. That's the only way that we're going to change things.
Yeah.
And keep giving to the Justin Pearson and Justin Jones Axe Blue accounts.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. But, Reverend, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks for the information, and I look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you.
Yeah. I got to tell you, this is another one of those moments where the overreach, it made no sense. No sense whatsoever. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1947. And if you tried to make a telephone call that day, you might have been out of luck. During that time, telephone calls were connected by operators. 95% of the operators were women. The National Federation of Telephone Workers called for a strike against AT&T. The strike was one of the largest work actions by a majority female workforce in U.S. history. More than 300,000 women took off their headsets and walked off the job. Telephone service disruptions were widespread. According to the New York Times, the demands of the workers included a $12 per week raise. The union wanted to negotiate a nationwide wage scale. The workers also wanted a guaranteed pension minimum and more vacation time. The slogan for the strike was, "The voice with a smile is gone for a while." A while turned out to be a month. As the strike wore on, newspapers decried interruptions to the telephone service. The day after the strike began, the New York Times editorial wondered, quote, whether essential public services should be subject to interruption by work stoppages growing out of labor disputes. In the end, the union did not win a national wage scale, and the wages continued to be settled at the local level. The next year, the National Federation of Telephone Workers had reorganized to form the Communication Workers of America as part of the CIO. Although the strike was largely not successful, it showed the potential power of women in the workforce.
Operator, but could you help me place this call?
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I got to tell you, I look at what's going on in Tennessee. Again, a massive overreach. Why would you shut their microphones off? Just let them have their say. You're going to do what you're going to do anyway. It's crazy times we're in. Let's quick go to the phone. I got John on line one. John, how you doing today?
Hey, this is John in Auburn, California, just east foothills of Sacramento. And I had a sentiment here for this Good Friday about the thing about the temple, the money changers at the temple. Okay. Thought they were so holy. How is that different from the conservative Republicans we got right now? Money changers at the temple under the guise of glory, God, And then they're just out for money. That's all.
No, okay.
Sorry to bother you.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, good.
Appreciate it, John.
All right, stay true to you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the time. No, I mean, the reality is we've got the Greedmeisters at the top. And here's one of these interesting little spiels. And this is one of those things where when I read this, I'm going, I need new friends. And you do, too. We talked yesterday about Clarence Thomas and all of the gifts he's been getting over the years, the luxury trips, you know, all of this stuff that, you know, that just been heaped upon him, you know, because out of the goodness of people's heart, not because he's sitting on the Supreme Court, and all of the things that have been going to Jenny Thomas, all the money, all the fame, all the titles, just out of the goodness of people's hearts, because she's just a good old girl. Well, Clarence Thomas came out with a statement, and the statement was, you know, basically, I love this. He said that he's been advised by colleagues and others in the judiciary that these trips that were financed by billionaires were considered personal hospitality, and they didn't have to be disclosed. It's just, you know, these people are his dear, dear friends. And of course, why? You know, why would they have to do this? These are just good friends helping someone out. Now, here's the thing. I've got good friends. I can't ever remember a time. And again, maybe I just need new friends. I can't remember a time when a dear friend said, you know, Rick, I like you. I like you and your wife and your kids. I like all you. Just why don't you get out? Why don't I buy you plane tickets, fly you to a luxurious resort, pay all of your room costs, all of your meal costs, you know, all of your entertainment costs? Because just you're just such a good friend. I want to show my appreciation every year for every year that you're at work. I don't have that kind of friend. Do you have that kind of friend? Because if you do, I want to hear it. Because this is the argument. The argument is, you know, I have dear friends who just want me to have nice things. And the sad thing here is, and this is the part that's important. This just isn't Clarence Thomas. Because if you look at his statement, early in my tenure at the court, I sought guidance from my colleagues and others in the judiciary, and was advised that this sort of personal hospitality from close personal friends who did not have business for the court was not reportable. Well, here's the thing. Maybe you'll see the flaw in this thinking. The Billionaire Club's a fairly small club. You know, a lot of them tied into other organizations that do have issues before the court. So everyone's got a friend who, exert a little trouble. And, you know, when you sit on the court, it's kind of like when you win the lottery. You know, the story you hear about people when they hit the Powerball or, you know, they hit millions, that they get a lot of friends that they never knew they had. I got to wonder how many of these close personal friends, you know, just came around after the court appointment. This kind of stuff. And look, it's just not Clarence Thomas. I'm not just picking on poor, poor Clarence. This is probably all of them on a certain level. If you remember when Antonin Scalia died, he was at an exclusive ranch owned by some guy named John Poindexter, who just happened to be a close personal friend. They were quail hunting. They were having dinner together. It was, you know, and I remember talking about it back then and going, why? Because Scalia was one of the guys, if you remember, let's go back a little bit, who was always complaining that their salaries were too low, that they didn't have enough money to hobnob. Now, understand, this is an interesting point here. They don't make enough money to hobnob in these exclusive circles, these luxury vacations. So when you have the billionaire class who says, oh, come on to my personal jet, come to my personal resort, we'll cover everything, don't worry about it. All on the arm. Don't worry about it. You can pay us back later. We'll let you get us something down the road. I'll tell you, I've never had that kind of a friend. And if you are a billionaire who wants to take me and my family on a luxury vacation that I don't have to pay for, by all means, give us a call. Because, you know, maybe I just have the wrong friends. But that being the argument, as I said, the reality is they're all doing it. And as we talked about yesterday on the program, the Supreme Court has very weak ethical guidelines. Because we look at them as, you know, as they're the Supreme Court. Of course they're going to be above boards. Of course they're going to be concerned about what the rest of us think of them, because they're the highest court in the land. They're the deciders. You know, to steal a George Bushism, they're the decider guys. And girls, they're the deciders. You know, our nine dictators in robes are doing some pretty bad stuff. For instance, you know, the whole Roe versus Wade thing. All of them. And I wonder if they had their fingers crossed behind their back when they lied and said, we believe in decided law. We believe in stare decisis. We would never. No, not us. First chance they got. I'll tell you, I actually believed that they wanted to at least, you know, keep a little veneer on the surface, so that there's the illusion that they believed in decided law. I thought Dobbs would go just a little bit. We would just make it a little more restrictive, a little more difficult. No, they went full Monty. And now what you've got a Texas judge appointed by who? Donald Trump, who today has moved to force the Food and Drug Administration to stop, to put a ban on this abortion drug. And are you surprised? Now, this is the most used medication for medical abortions in the country. So look, this is a guy who, you know, was quite open and honest. His name is Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, I think it is, in the Northern District of Texas. He openly opposed Roe versus Wade. Previously, he presided over a case involving Title 10 in family planning programs. You know, not somebody who was going to be on your side. He has done what he did. Now, flip side, you got an Obama appointee who has come out. This Thomas O. Rice out in Spokane has come out and said that he's going to put a stop to that, but only in the 17 states that requested it. He partially granted a request from these 17 states and the District of Columbia. So it's in limbo right now for those states. The rest of the country, you're screwed. And I had some people going, well, you know, we hope that it'll be overturned on appeal. And my thought is, don't hold your breath, because what I understand is it's going to go to the Fifth Circuit, which everyone knows is the most radical right-wing federal circuit court of appeals in the country. That's where the crazy right-wingers want their stuff to go. And then even if it does miraculously go down, and I doubt it will, it'll be appealed to where? That's right, the Supreme Court, where our judges, our justices, who are taking luxury vacations and trips and getting all kinds of stuff, will then hear this case. Our six dictators in robes will then decide. And I don't know that it's going to be all that much different, because they undid 50 years of decided law when they overturned Roe. And again, I got to go back to the fact that every one of them on that court that said, no, we believe in decided law. We believe that this is the law of the land. Just like they did when they overturned the Abood decision that brought us Janus, that said, no, the public sector in the entire nation is now a no rights at work country. We're a no rights at work country for you public sector people. One stroke of the pen. And the question that keeps coming back is, you know, and I asked my friends who, that's what we wanted. We wanted them to overturn all of that hippie liberal stuff. When did they come for you? Because this court, again, is a corporate court. They do what the corporate masters tell them. In fact, when the Chamber of Commerce, and this has been well documented, when they issue an amicus brief, in any case, the Supreme Court goes their way in 75% of the cases. Wow, to have that kind of win rate. I gotta wonder.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.